Guy Searle gets a new iPod. Chad is still waiting for the touch, and Tim still has a touch of sickness.
My Mac Podcast 144.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it's another exciting week in the Macintosh universe. I am Tim Robertson here in Battle Creek, Michigan with Chad Perry.
I am Chad Perry.
And we got Guy Searle calling in via Skype. Hi, Guy.
Hey, yes, I am Guy Searle.
My voice is a little bit better than last week.
Oh, yeah, just a little.
Just a little bit. Hold on a minute. I have to
take a swig. So, we were just talking briefly before we came online about one of the new rumors about Apple Computer. Guy, you want to start this one off?
Yeah, one of the things I've been hearing is that the iTunes Apple Music Store may start doing video rentals.
Yeah, I heard about that too. The last rumor, and you know how much I love rumors, but
right.
The last rumor I read was $2.99, 30-day rentals.
Yeah, that's what I'd read as well.
Would be great. I mean, that's a good price, mm-hmm. And that's, I think, an appropriate amount of time.
Yeah, if you can't find 2 or 3 hours in 30 days, then you probably shouldn't be running anything.
No.
Well, do you think this could be Apple trying to find a niche for the Apple TV?
Well, they better find something for the Apple TV because at the moment it's fairly worthless. I mean, I just don't see people buying a $300 or $400 device so they can
to watch
stream
their own video content on a TV set.
Well, if they already own the video content, they probably have the DVD, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to look 100 times better if you put it in your home DVD player and watch it, mm-hmm. especially right. if you have an upscaling DVD player with a high-def TV,
yeah,
which is kind of where Apple's positioning the Apple TV to work with high-def monitors.
Mm-hmm. And not the $49 Walmart special.
Now, Robert Hazelrig actually sent Chad and I a voicemail a few weeks ago after Chad and I went to the Ann Arbor, Michigan Apple store and talked about
our first impressions of the Apple TV.
So. And he said that it looked a lot better at his Apple store and that maybe
they didn't have it set up correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. Which it could be. I really don't know. I do know that for what we saw, Chad, I thought it looked crappy.
Yeah.
Well, I know that there's three. I have, you know, I'm pretty lucky. I've got three relatively close by Apple stores. And I've had the opportunity to visit all three of them since the Apple TV has come out, and not in a single one of them do they have one hooked up to anything. It's like it's not even there.
I don't remember seeing one in Grand Rapids the last time we were up there. But did they have the Apple TV out when we were up there?
Sheesh. We were last up there, well, it was March because we went to see 300 with Rick Stringer. And
that's right.
And, yeah, so that was a...
I don't believe it was out in March.
I don't think it was. I think wasn't it?
Yeah, it might have been. Yes, I still have the cough, folks. It's it's one of those nasty things that I got a really, really bad bug.
Yeah.
Literally the first day I could make any noise at all was last week when we did the podcast. Mm. And I could barely talk then.
Yeah.
And my voice still isn't 100%. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's maybe 60 to 70%. And I'm constantly clearing my throat.
Yeah.
Which is, you know.
I hate when that happens.
Ugh. And my chest is killing me from coughing so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I pulled a muscle. It feels like I have a stitch. You know, if you run too much.
Yeah, you probably did.
I feel like I have a stitch in the right side.
Mm-hmm.
That if
You can pull a muscle in your chest from, like, constant coughing.
Oh, I did do that. There's no question. But I also have this little stitch on the right-hand side, right below my rib cage. It just, ugh. Mm. If I sit, especially at my office at home, if I sit in my chair for more than 20 minutes, I can't stand it anymore. I have to get up. Mm. It literally hurts too much. So, but I'm recovering.
Yeah.
Anybody want to help me recover? Cash will do.
You can make that out to Guy Searle.
Yeah. So Guy Searle got a new iPod. What's up with that? What'd you get?
Yeah, well, my birthday was last Sunday. And
are you on the staff mailing list, by the way?
I don't know. I don't know. I get stuff from Robert, and I occasionally get stuff from John Nemo, but that's pretty much it.
Well, then I'm assuming that you're not on the staff mailing list.
Because you've been getting a lot of well wishers this
birthday. Yeah, because so. I sent you out a happy birthday to the staff emailing list, and you probably got a good 20 replies.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I didn't see it.
I'm going to have to add you to the staff emailing list then.
Yeah,
yeah, well, it'll sure make all those birthday wishes a lot easier to get to me.
Yeah. Couldn't hurt.
Yeah. Anyway.
So you got a new iPod.
Well, my wife is always at a loss to figure out what to get me for my birthday.
Cash.
That's kind of impersonal. It's nice, certainly is, but you know, she's always trying to find something, and she knows that I'm a tech guy, and so she said, "Well, look, you know, they got all the new iPods out. Let's go on over to the Apple Store." So we went over to the Clarendon Apple Store, and as soon as we walked in, I walked right up to the table that had the Nanos, and I picked one of them up, and it was like my hand just swallowed it. There was just, I closed my hand and it was like, am I holding a Nano? Now I am. Now I'm not. Now I am. You know, almost like a magic trick.
Of course, you are a big man, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I played with it for a while. It's got the 2-inch screen and it looks okay, but part of the reason why I avoided getting a video iPod was that I thought that the 2.5-inch screen was too small for video. So you can imagine as I'm looking at part of a Heroes episode on a 2-inch Nano, it's like, God, I can't even see where the damn thing is. So then she was saying, well, what about the Touch? That's coming out soon. Would you like one of those instead? And, of course, you know, they didn't have them there at the store, but they did have the iPhones. So I went over to the iPhones and started to play with one of those on a table. And I started to think about how I typically use my iPod. And I came to the realization that where I'm typically using it is in my car. And trying to manipulate a touch screen to just view audio and video content while driving at, you know, breakneck speeds down 25-mile-an-hour roads is just not really what I wanted to do. So,
especially the video content.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's there in the seat next to me, I've got to keep jerking my head back and forth, and that just hurts after a while.
Yeah.
So I figured, okay, the Nano is way too small. The Touch isn't, it's very, very nice. And my wife was offering, she said, well, if we just wait, we can go ahead and get one of those. But I decided that considering how I typically use my iPod, that I would just go ahead and go with an 80-gigabyte iPod Classic.
This bed is too soft. This bed is too hard.
This bed is just right.
So that's what I went with.
Well, I can't say I blame you. I've got the 60 gig model, the generation 5, not 5.5, just 5. And, you know, I still use that to listen to, you know, all my music on. I don't use the iPhone typically to listen to music on it. Although no. I did find out something that was interesting.
What's that?
I knew from reading reports online that a lot of the iPod peripheral things wouldn't work with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. I didn't even buy one yet.
And so I have, what is that thing called in the car, Chad? The Harman Kardon.
Oh, that little
Play. The iCarPlay. It's still the first one. They haven't come out with the 2.0 version yet, which I want.
A little flippy thing.
Yeah. It's
flippy and twisty.
It has a little screen.
It's flip twist.
And it has a twist knob with buttons on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to plug it in to see what would happen. I figured if it made my iPhone blow up, I can always take it back to Apple and go, I don't know what happened to it. It just stopped working. So I plugged it in, and on the iPod or on the iPhone screen, it says, it's not compatible with this and this. Do you want to continue to use it and go into airplane mode? I was like, what? No.
So airplane.
So I just clicked no. And it didn't make a difference, though, because it worked fine. It would let me, go to the next song, go back to the last song. It wouldn't recognize my playlists or anything, but I could control the music within whatever playlist that I started playing right before I plugged it in. So what I would do on the iPhone, I would go to the playlist that I want to listen to, whether that's a podcast, whether that's a music playlist, whatever it is. I maneuver to it, hit play, then plug it in, and it works fine. So I was happy about that, obviously, mm-hmm. because if I do leave my iPod at home, which happens quite a bit, you know, I leave and I'm going somewhere and I'm like, oh crap, I forgot to bring the iPod and now I'm stuck listening to the radio.
Yeah.
I'm always going to have the iPhone with me because it's my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I just plug that in now. It works great. Now, I don't know if it's going to cause me to lose or miss phone calls. So I need to test that out.
But yeah, but it could actually be cool if you could actually
hear it
to yourself, your call through this. Yeah, for hands-free driving.
Yeah. iCarPlay. Imagine that.
It might work out well if it finally manages to keep your ex-wife from calling you.
There you go. But it was a nice, it was a pleasant surprise that it actually did anything at all.
Yeah.
I don't know if it charges it or not, but I'm not really worried about that.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, one thing I did notice with both the iPod Nano and the Classic, which has a slightly updated version of the Classic iPod operating system or the, you know, user interface, is that using CoverFlow, it is much slower than what it was using before.
It's
much slower than my first generation Nano as far as switching from screen to screen.
Well, and it's got a display, you know,
all the everything you're flipping
all the color
it.
And you know, yeah, that,
right.
That's right. I really don't see the point in CoverFlow on the original iPod.
No,
I really don't.
I don't either.
I honestly don't see the point in CoverFlow on iTunes.
Right.
I
it's eye candy.
Yeah,
it's
it is eye candy. Down. It well, doesn't
get ready
do
for
me any
cover
good.
CoverFlow and Leopard.
Yeah, well, in that regard, I could kind of see how it may be. Do you want to explain to the listeners what that means when you say get ready for CoverFlow and Leopard?
Oh, well, CoverFlow is essentially going to be one of the new Finder options. You've got Column View and Icon View and all those. And CoverFlow, if you've played around with iTunes 7, you can note that you've got a window that has all of your album covers on it and a scroll bar that goes across your screen. And as you slide that scroll bar, the albums are flipping back and forth. Well, in Leopard, one of your Finder options is going to be pretty much the same thing. So instead of scrolling down a column or you know, scrolling down the big window looking at a bunch of icons, you'll have a graphic representation of each file that's within a folder, and you'll be able to flip past them back and forth.
And do you think that's going to be a good idea or just eye candy?
My initial impression is that it's going to be eye candy, but I'm an Apple fan, so I'm willing to
keep an open mind.
Yeah, keep an open mind.
Yeah.
But
we don't have long to wait.
No, it's just coming up next month.
Yep, I'm really looking forward to it too.
Yeah,
yeah, more than I was the iPhone or new iPods or iLife. Really been looking forward to 10.5. Although, excuse me. That being said. Now that I've had the iPhone for, 4 weeks or so?
Yeah.
Right.
I love it. Mm-hmm. It's just fantastic. It is, in my opinion, one of the best products Apple has ever made.
Have you had a chance to apply for your $100 rebate?
No, I don't see how anybody has yet. From what I could see, that Apple hasn't released any details on that.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I was thinking that was already done.
Well, they've announced that you're going to be able to get it. They just haven't announced details yet. One of the things that came out this week for the iPhone is ringtones with
yes.
iTunes 4.0 or 7.4 or whatever it is.
7.41.
Yeah. And the more I think about this, the more I think this is BS. Let's say I've had a song for a long time. Had it on CD. But I want a certain song as a ringtone. As supported in iTunes, I can't use that as a ringtone. I literally have to go buy the song again on the iTunes Music Store for 99 cents. Then I also have to spend another 99 cents to buy the right to use it as a ringtone.
Well, now, if you originally had purchased the song through iTunes, can you still just pay like the extra 99 cents?
If it's an approved.
Or do you have to actually buy the song again?
No, you don't have to buy the song again if you already own it. If Apple is allowing you, and this is probably coming from the record companies, allowing that particular song to be used as a ringtone.
So it's not the entire library then?
No. How many songs does Apple have up there now? Like 3 million?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's about 500,000 songs that are ringtone approved.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, not all the songs yet. That being said, let's assume, though, that I already own the song. I own the CD. iTunes allows you to import all that music into iTunes.
Right.
I don't know, use Bohemian Rhapsody from Queen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that's up on the iTunes store or not. I'm going to assume that it is.
I think it is.
So I want to use a part of Bohemian Rhapsody as a ringtone. Mm-hmm. Officially through the iTunes Music Store. I have to buy that song again, and then I have to buy it again as a ringtone. So now not only did I buy the CD originally, mm-hmm. I bought the song in iTunes Music Store.
Then you bought it again.
Then I bought it again for the ringtone. So because Bohemian Rhapsody has, what, like four different courses in it when the mm-hmm. music changes.
Yeah.
And let's say I grab a snippet at the beginning, and it sounds great, and it's a perfect mm-hmm. ringtone. But there's another part of the song later on that I would also like to use as a ringtone.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what?
Can't do it.
Got to spend another 99 cents.
Oh, good golly.
Now,
Wait. Say that again?
If I bought Bohemian Rhapsody or any song through the iTunes right. Music Store for 99 cents, then I spent another 99 cents to make it into a ringtone. I can't imagine any ringtone going more than 30 seconds because that mm-hmm. would be super annoying.
Yeah.
Usually you're like 10 seconds tops. So I create my ringtone that I want within iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got that part, Guy?
Yeah.
But now there's another part of the song that I want to use as a second ringtone. Can't do it. Got to buy it again.
That's just weird.
That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They should be hit with thunderbolts and lightning.
That's like a very
frightening.
That's like a racket if you ask me. I mean,
yeah.
Here's the thing. There's workarounds already that is well publicized online.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been using those to create my own ringtones. And, the thing is, it just works. The ringtones that you could create.
And I'm looking at Ambrosia's website, and they've got iToner.
That's what I'm using.
Yeah.
And, no, I'm not using iToner. There's another program. They have a free program
mm-hmm.
that would allow you to drop any music file onto it.
Yeah.
And it automatically sends it to iTunes in the correct format and everything, and boom, it's mm-hmm. done. And that's how I did it. You didn't hear this, Guy, so I'll play this for you real quick.
Okay.
When my wife calls, not my ex-wife, my wife.
Okay, she's allowed to call.
Yeah, she's allowed to call.
Okay.
When she calls now, I have a custom ringtone for her. Want to hear it?
Sure. She who must be obeyed.
So that's my custom ringtone for when my wife calls. She didn't find it too amusing for whatever reason.
Well, how far along is she now in her pregnancy?
I don't know. She's due at the end of November. We'll let the home listeners figure that out.
Yeah.
Life's too short. So you're still waiting. When is the Touch supposed to show up? When are they going to start selling this?
I believe it's late September, early October.
So you still have about another month to wait, Chad.
Oh, yeah.
Is it killing you? You just dying to get your hands on Touch?
No, not yet, because actually I'm thinking this probably maybe you have to wait till Christmas, which actually wouldn't be bad because that's about the time they usually either do a price drop or...
You're not going to see a price drop that soon.
Okay.
No.
With Apple's fiasco of dropping the iPhone by $200. Plus, let's be honest, $299 for the Touch.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good price.
Yeah.
Well, now, you guys have heard about the Apple event in London?
Yeah, they're going to introduce the iPhone over there next week.
Do you think there might be more to it? That they could also maybe introduce a...
Yeah, I heard they're giving a free one to David Cohen.
I'm thinking they could introduce a 16 gig iPhone.
They could. I just don't think they're going to yet. I think they've had enough bad PR. Because let's be honest.
Yeah.
Apple last week has this big event. They come out with a new Nano, which, from everything I've seen, is a pretty good little machine.
Mm-hmm.
They come out with the Classic.
Mm-hmm.
The big news, though, is the Touch.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody sees the Touch and goes, oh, my God, that's exactly what I've been waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
But what does the press talk about for the entire week?
$200 drop in the price of the
iPhone. Oh, yeah.
Right. Now, some people say, well, that's good for Apple. You know, they're...
Oh, no, I don't think
they
so.
They didn't, at least none of the news sources that I've either seen on television or read online, none of them made that out to be a positive story. Hey, the iPhone's now, you know, this mm-hmm. price, $200 cheaper, $399. Mm-hmm. I didn't see those stories. I saw the stories that said, Apple drops the price of the iPhone by $200 and early adopters are upset.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I saw.
Right.
And I think that hurt Apple. I really do. So do I think that there's going to be a 16-gigabyte iPhone? Sure, of course. Eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe towards Christmas. Is it going to happen next week in London? No way.
I don't think so now.
I could be wrong. Don't get me wrong. But I really don't think so. I think Apple's got enough bad PR in the last week that one of the, you know, if anybody's going to cannibalize iPhone sales, Apple wants it to be Apple.
Right.
If you don't buy an iPhone, maybe you buy the iTouch.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honest, if I wouldn't have bought the iPhone, I'd be all over the Touch. There's mm-hmm. no question. Maybe. Because for me, the Touch really doesn't make a lot of sense. It mm-hmm. doesn't hold enough information and enough music.
Mm-hmm. Enough stuff.
Right. You know, there's no way I could put my music on that thing. It's just too small. It doesn't work in a car well, like Guy said. I would want it simply because of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But as an iPod itself, it really wouldn't have done me any good. I need larger capacity. You, on the other hand, Chad, probably don't need that much capacity.
Not when I've been limited to a 1 gig shuffle for the last 6 months, you know?
Yeah, so that's going to seem huge.
You learn to
you.
Live with less, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And there are times where I will sit there and think, God, I would really love to hear this song, but I don't have it on this thing.
You know? Yep.
And I would love to just stop this and go, stop this podcast, go to something else, and then come back and listen to it, which you also can't do on the shuffle.
Right. Because no, unless it's the very next song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the shuffle is...
It's limited in what it can do. But
it's good for kids.
It's good for kids, and it's good for people who want to go out and exercise, want something that's light and inconspicuous, and for $80, you can't get any better than that.
I agree. But for me, the Touch kind of fills the same void
mm-hmm.
as the shuffle does, in that it doesn't hold enough for me,
mm-hmm.
and it's not good for driving with.
Right.
Unless you've got something like the iCarPlay, mm-hmm. where you could just plug it in and control it from there.
Yeah.
But I just feel that the iPod Classic, is, I guess we're going to have to start calling it,
mm-hmm.
is just more durable, especially for taking it in and out and plugging it in and out of the car, and it just seems more durable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Probably not. I mean, it's got a mechanical hard drive,
yeah.
where the iPhone and the iTouch are flash. Solid state. So, we've got an audio file from feedback from Dan Rodriguez. So let's take a listen to that real quick.
Hi, Chad, Tim, and Guy. This is Dan Rodriguez from Michigan. Just have a question in regards. Well, you know, honestly, before I ask my question, my brother bought recently a laptop for under $600. It was a Core Duo laptop. It was a compact, cheap as hell. It looked cheap, and you know, he obviously knows that it's cheap. My thing is, you know, would you ever, let's say if you guys were not Mac users at all, what laptop would you buy? Because personally, I think that value wise the MacBook is an exceptional value. The MacBook Pros, on the other hand, I think they're a little pricey. What do you think? Do you think they're, you know, too pricey? You think maybe Apple's charging a little too much for the MacBook Pros? And getting back to the Windows scenario, if you were a Windows user, what laptop would you buy? What laptop would you consider? I personally myself, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I personally myself would probably buy a Livino. I think the ThinkPads are, I think they're pretty sturdy looking. But I definitely want to buy a Dell or a Compaq. Maybe an HP. Who the heck knows? But either way, I'll throw that question out to you guys. What laptop would you buy if you are a Windows user and not a Mac user? Again, I like your show. I'll keep listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Yeah, thanks, Dan, for the feedback, as always.
Yeah, and you always pick some pretty cool music.
I do. I'm just going to let it play underneath while we're responding. Cheap PC laptop. Let me first say I've got an aunt who has some relatives. They're relatives of mine as well. Are coming to stay with her. Mm-hmm. And they're staying in the same room where she keeps her Power Mag G5.
Mm.
So she came to me saying, you know, I want a laptop. And I'm thinking, that's great, but you basically want a laptop for a couple weeks, max.
Mm-hmm.
Although, personally, I think she'll start using it a lot. But she only wanted to spend $500 or less.
Huh.
Mm.
And I told her, I said, well, you know, you can go to Walmart and pick one of those up, you know.
Yeah.
Any PC will do that. That's that cheap. Well, what should I get? Not a PC laptop. That's what I said.
Right.
I said, well, you can get one, but you do know I'm not going to help you with it at all. If you have any problems at all, you're on your own.
The Play School Plink and Play laptop.
And she understood that, and I'm trying to steer her towards a MacBook.
Right.
Or even a used PowerBook G4 would be more than adequate.
Yeah.
Except she doesn't have wireless networking at her house, so she's going to get a wireless
router.
But those are so dirt cheap. Those are like $40 now. So,
yeah.
So Dan, I've been in the situation just recently. If money isn't an object or an issue, and I had to buy a PC laptop, do you guys have any?
How's the Sony Vaio? I've never actually used
one. I have used them. They're for PC laptops, that's the one I would buy.
Yeah.
If I had to buy a PC laptop, I would probably buy the Vaio. It's probably aesthetically and durability probably the closest to a MacBook Pro as you're going to find in the PC world.
Now, at work, we usually use the HPs, and I think they're the Pavilions. And those are actually not half bad for a PC. I mean, it's reliable enough.
I was going to ask, what are HPs like?
I haven't used one recently. Nah. The old IBM ones, the whatever.
The ThinkPads?
Whatever they're called now.
Yeah.
Lenovo. I've heard good things about those as well, but I've been a Vaio fan for a while as far as PC laptops go.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my choice. The other part of Dan's question was MacBook versus MacBook Pro, what's a better deal? They're pretty close, honestly, as far as functionality. It depends on how much of a power user you are.
And what you're going to use it for.
And what you're going to use it for. Well, that kind of goes with the whole power user thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do video editing or any kind of large file editing, you definitely want to go with the MacBook Pro.
Yep.
It's got a faster hard drive.
Yeah. Graphics card.
It's a more powerful machine. Yeah. It's got a larger screen. Whether it's any more durable or not, I don't know. But if what you really need is something that you could take with you, check your email, browse the internet, kind of what Chad uses his for most of the time.
Right, anything will do.
Well, not anything, but a Mac. I would say a MacBook would probably be a better choice because of the price.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If it's $1,000 cheaper, you know, you could buy two of them and keep one as a spare.
Well,
so I would definitely, it would be nice to do a series on what's the best MacBook or iMac or fill in the blank Mac name.
Yeah.
What's the best for you? But the problem is people have so many different needs that it's really, really difficult to say, well, this is the one that you definitely want.
I mean, my wife has a 900 megahertz G3 iBook, and she's perfectly happy with it for what she uses it for, which is basically browsing the internet.
Yeah.
Well, I know whenever anybody asks me about, you know, I've had several people just recently come up, and because they know I'm the Apple guy at work, say that, you know, well, I'm thinking about getting a Mac. What should I get? And one of my first questions is, what are you going to use it for? You know, if it's just for general stuff, browsing the web, getting your email, MacBooks are great. There's really nothing wrong with them. If you feel limited by a 13.3 inch screen, or if you want to get into some of the other things that Macs are really, really good for, then go ahead, spend the money, get the MacBook Pro or an iMac or, you know, whichever machine suits your needs.
Right. Yeah. Well, for me, you know, I want to go Intel all at home. And so I really want to replace the PowerMac G5. But my problem really is that the PowerMac G5 is so powerful and it's so tricked out that I really don't know if I want to simply sell it or live with it and not worry about an iMac right now. There's two different camps. A lot of people are saying, well, there's nothing that the iMac can do that the PowerMac G5 can't do. Technically, that's not true, and I'll get into why in a second. And even the new iMacs are not going to be as powerful as that G5. I mean, that G5 I've got, it's got 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
It's got two 2.5 gigahertz processors in it. It's like a powerful machine.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. That one took me by surprise. It's a good machine, you know, and I don't have any complaints about it. And I hate the idea of just selling it and replacing it with an iMac. It just seems wrong to me to replace something so powerful with something that's kind of limited.
Right.
But by the same token, I'm really not taking advantage of all that power anymore.
No.
I do a lot of my work on the MacBook Pro. And that's the first generation MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm completely happy with it.
And that's with just the Core Duo. It's not even the Core 2 Duo.
Exactly.
I'm frankly satisfied even doing the work that I have on my MacBook. But I will say this. With a MacBook, you do, if you're going to be running any sort of Microsoft Office application through Rosetta, you need to have the full 2 gigs in there to really make it comfortable to use.
Bogs it down a lot, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was using just the baseline model with the 256 meg in it, it was just...
too slow.
Yeah. Clunky.
Yeah, getting a little bogged down.
Yep.
Stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
Well, for me, if anybody out there is interested in the G5, let me know. I know David Cohen is actually interested, but the problem there is he's in England.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather not Real ship David it that Cohen. Far,
mm-hmm.
not knowing what could happen to the machine.
Well, plus also he has to pay, a big like tax once he takes receipt of the machine.
Well, that...
because what Tim can do is he can ship it as livestock, and that usually...
Yeah, then it's held in quarantine for 6 months.
That's right. That's right. Well, got to make sure it doesn't have a... I guess it would be called a... It's instead of mad cow, mac cow disease.
Mac cow disease.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm
hard drive and foot disease. Or no,
I'm looking to step up to a MacBook Pro pretty soon. I doubt I'll be getting a new one. I've been watching the refurb section, and
that's good prices.
Yeah, right. I'm looking at it right now, and for a 2.2 MacBook Pro, they're asking $1,699 down from $1,999.
But there was a good price.
There was one there a couple of weeks ago. I think it was the 2.16 for $1,450.
That's a good. I wish
I had snatched it up. By the time I thought about it and talked to my wife and everything else, it was like I went back and looked again, and shoop, it was gone. So the next time I see one that comes down underneath $1,500, I'm probably going to snatch it up.
Keep your eye on Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com. Used to be our sponsor. they get a lot of refurb machines there.
Yeah, and they're really reasonable, and they stick behind the refurbs.
Absolutely. That's where we got Chad's wife's G3 iBook. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
and actually, we had problems with the first one we got.
And you shipped it back, and we had absolutely no problem.
Yep.
So, something to keep in mind, Guy.
Okay.
I mean, I wish they were still a sponsor, but even if they're not, I still recommend people go there because mm-hmm. they have a lot of models that, you know, at really good prices at a lot of times. Yep. So right. it's worth, you know, it's your money, man. You want to get as much for it as you can.
Oh, yeah.
The reason, one of the reasons that I want to move all Intel, at least as far as the desktop machine, because I'll still have a lot of machines sitting there. Yeah. EA, a gaming company, mm-hmm. sent me four. Did I talk about this last week?
No, we didn't. You talked to me about it, not anybody else.
Sent me four video games for review.
Oh, cool.
Unfortunately,
none of them work in the G5 platform.
No, they all work on
Intel only.
Intel only.
Which one?
So I can play them on my MacBook Pro, but that's really not a gaming machine. And it's such a big pain in the butt to try to unhook my 23-inch monitor and plug that into the MacBook Pro, yeah. as well as a keyboard and mouse, because you're not going to play a game with a trackpad. It's just
mm-hmm. right.
It's not going to happen. But I did, other than hooking the monitor up, mm-hmm. I did play Command & Conquer 3 mm-hmm. for about an hour, which isn't long enough to really give it a fair review yet, obviously. Right. And I just played one skirmish. I didn't even go through the whole mm-hmm. single player, anything. It's a skirmish. Yeah. And, you know, I used to love Command & Conquer. Tiberian something, or I don't know.
Yeah, just the right.
Back in the classic Mac days.
Yeah,
right.
And I really liked those games. They were a lot of fun. A lot of resource management, which I kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
Build up your army, scout out the mm-hmm. other guy, attack, defend, that sort of thing. So I thought, wow, you know, this is Command & Conquer 3. I bet this mm-hmm. is a lot different. Not really. It's pretty much the same game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get the, I don't know what it is, the little Vespin rock thing.
No, it's the, what do they call that stuff?
Tiberium. Yeah.
Tiberium, yeah.
You mine that, you mm-hmm. build your bases, you upgrade, you attack, you defend.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. My problem was I was playing it on the MacBook Pro screen. In a game like that, you really want the biggest monitor you can get.
Yeah.
Which is why I keep looking at either the 20 or the 24-inch IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
It would play the games natively. It's got that glossy screen, so it'll look great.
Right.
And it'll be nice and big. So that's kind of one of, I mean, I think more and more things are going to start coming out for Intel only.
Well, it's not, not even EA. Aspyr's been doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, Aspyr's actually the one that's doing a lot of their ports.
Yeah.
But they sent me, so Command & Conquer 3, Harry Potter and, I don't know, something.
Sorcerer's Stone or something.
Yeah, I don't think it was Sorcerer's Stone.
Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix. And I actually played a demo of that on the Xbox 360. I was kind of interested in, maybe I'll buy this. The kids might really like this too, but now that I got it for the Mac.
Yeah.
But, again, mm-hmm. you know.
Too small a screen.
What was the... and the other thing is that I don't have enough hard drive space because I also have Windows Vista on that machine.
Mm.
So I've got my hard drive segmented.
Yeah.
I've only got like 10 gigs free after installing Command & Conquer 3, which took like 4 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, man, I just don't have the space. What was the other two games? Carbon, Need for Speed Carbon.
Oh, yeah. I've got that on the PS2. That's great. That's a great racing game.
There's one other one. I'm drawing a blank, though.
Who's
this from?
Let's see what's out there.
EA. Boy, it's right there on the tip of my tongue. Chad's going to look it up real quick. it's so far, though. I am a video game player.
Battlefield 2142.
Yes, yeah. that's the other one, yes. I haven't even popped that in. I don't know anything about the game. So there's a lot of games that I want to play. Now, when I say a lot of things are going to start going to the Intel platform, I mean stuff like this. Mm-hmm. I don't think programs like Adobe Photoshop or Microsoft Office or the heavyweight programs out there, as well as most shareware stuff still,
mm-hmm.
and smaller developers, they're not going to discontinue making stuff for the PowerPC chip.
No, right? They're not.
The reason that they did for these games is because these are PC ports,
mm-hmm.
and they're using a certain technology, which I'm just drawing a blank on right now. Everyone listen
it's,
to this.
Oh, what do they call that?
Not wine.
It's not wine. It's similar. What's the name they use for that port?
Doesn't it basically just provide
a framework,
an alternative to the DX9 and DX10? God. People can listen to this podcast and go, you guys are just...
Well, you know what, Guy? That's your assignment for show 145. Your assignment is to figure out what they're doing and why they're doing it and how it does it. Putting them to work.
It's Dart. I want to say it's not Darwin. It's, I can't remember what it is now.
I know what it is. I just can't think of the name.
I can't think of the name now.
I know. So, if there's anybody out there listening that's interested in the PowerMac G5, let me know. It'll have a lot of software on it. Because I'll probably forget to take stuff off. And I get a lot of products from a lot of manufacturers. So, there might be someone in the West Michigan area that says, hey, Tim, I'll buy it from you. Let's go up to the Apple store. I'll buy an iMac and we'll switch.
Switch.
We do got an audio file from Robert Hazelrig. He wanted to send something in about Adobe CS3 InDesign. So let's play that, and we will be back next week where Guy's going to tell us all about this fabulous emulation type of software that they're using to port these PC games to the Mac.
Yes, of course I am.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Hello, Robert Hazelrig here. Today I'd like to talk to you about my favorite new application inside of the Adobe CS3 Design Suite. And that is, of course, InDesign. In case you've been living under a rock for the last 3 or 4 years, InDesign is a page layout application that rivals Quark Express. The significant advantage that InDesign has over Quark Express is its seamless integration with all of the other Adobe applications, such as Photoshop and Illustrator. For those of you who are already in the know, I won't go over all of the detailed functions of InDesign, but rather I'll talk about what is new to the new version of InDesign and hopefully give you some ammunition to go to your boss with and say, hey, I really need this application because it does X now. Now, I've been using InDesign, the new version that is, for a few months now, and my favorite new feature is the Next Image functionality. In the past, when you had to import multiple images into your page layout document, you would have to go into Place Image, select the image, and then once that image is loaded, place that into your document for each individual image. Now, of course, that's not such a big deal if you're only working with one or two images, but let's say you're working in a layout that actually has 35 images. Well, now you can actually go into your image folder and you can shift select as many images as you like. Then once you click OK and you're back in your page layout, you will notice that you have a loaded cursor. And this cursor has a little square icon on it, which actually displays a small icon that has a graphic representation of the photo or vector art image that you are about to place into the document. It's really cool that you can also use the cursor tools to cycle through the different images before you place them. So let's say you've selected these images and you don't actually want to place them in the alphabetical sequence that they were selected. You can actually use your arrow keys to select the image that you want to place at any given moment. My second favorite feature in the new InDesign CS3 is the new effects panel. the new effects panel is so much more powerful than it ever used to be. In the past, when you had a, let's say, a text box, and the text box has text in it, it has an outline, and it has a fill. If you wanted to apply a transparency to the fill of that text box, what would happen? Of course, everything would become transparent. The text, the outline, and the fill. Now, InDesign breaks those up into three separate elements, so you only have to draw one box, and if you want the fill to be transparent, it won't affect the type or the outline. You can also now control many more Photoshop-like functions from within the effects panel, such as feather and emboss, and an all-new gradient feature. In the past, if you wanted to lay a gradient over an image, you were forced to go back into Photoshop to lay that gradient color on top of your image. Now that can be done directly from within InDesign. One last new addition that I really like is table styles. Thank God they finally introduced table styles. I can't tell you how many documents that I've worked in that has multiple tables, and I would have to remember all of the little silly nuances to each table, and then when the client changed their mind, have to go back into three or four different tables and make all of the changes all over again. Now, table styles work just like style sheets do. But it's not all fun and games. There are two things about the new InDesign that I particularly don't like. The first thing I have an issue with is the new workspace setup. In the past, when you saved a workspace and shut down InDesign, when you loaded InDesign again, or launched InDesign again, I should say, InDesign remembered your settings and retained your palette settings. However you left it is the way you got it. Well, now when you launch InDesign, no matter if you've saved your workspace or not, it doesn't always retain that workspace. If you're working in the default mode and like the default mode, it's fine. But if you're like me, I have multiple monitor setups, and I tear off all my panels into a nicely arranged arrangement off to my left-hand side. And when the next time I launch InDesign, it doesn't remember where those panels were, even though I have saved the workspace. Now, it's not the worst thing in the world, because I can go to the workspace setting that I have saved in the pull-down menu, select it, and it will set the panels back again to my liking. But to have to do that every time I launch the application is an annoyance. Then, of course, to add insult to injury in the panels department is the fact that the new icons for the flyout menus, you know, the ones that hide and show more options, has been reduced to a minuscule little target that I find very hard to select when I'm working. I'm used to having a much larger target to hit when I want to hide or show more options from within any panel. And now I find that I actually have to look at the panel while I'm selecting it. In the past, I was so accustomed to having my panels in a certain position that I almost never had to look over at my panels and was able to select nearly anything that I needed to select. Well, that's not the case anymore. I actually do have to look at every panel when I'm about to select the hide and show. And the reason I need to focus on it so much is because those two icons, the close and open and the hide and show more options icons, are so tiny and so close together that it's easy to hit one when you're trying to hit the other. I am, however, happy to report that I did speak with Chad, who is a press representative at Adobe, and told him of my complaints, and he said that he was aware of it and they were aware of it at Adobe and have been working on both of the issues that I had mentioned. And to that I say, yay, look, somebody who actually cares about his users. Take that, Quark. Oh, and take that, Microsoft. Before I go, I want to tell you about one last little thing that Adobe has developed that isn't really specifically an InDesign feature, but does work in InDesign. It also works in Illustrator and Photoshop and a bunch of other CS applications. And that new thing is called Kuler. It's spelled K-U-L-E-R. And if you go to the cooler.adobe.com website, you will see a number of very slick and cool and relevant color schemes that you can use from within any of your CS3 suite applications. What you do is go in there, register, log in, you will get an account, and then you'll be able to download these ASE files. And when you import those into your color palettes, voila, you have all these beautiful color schemes to work from within all of the applications. I've found that I've mostly used this in InDesign and Illustrator, although they will be imported into Photoshop if you'd like them to be. And through using them, I've found it has speeded up my design time. I don't have to think about what colors I'm going to use so much. I just go and select a scheme and then implement that scheme into my design in a relatively quick manner. Oh, by the way, I think Kuler works with CS2 applications as well. So you definitely have to check it out. Well, that's it for me this week. This has been Robert Hazelrig.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.